We present the News Quiz of the Year, Part 1, with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello, Merry Christmas, and welcome to the first part of the quiz, which will demonstrate, I'm sure, that it doesn't have to be Christmas for there to be an abundance of turkeys about. But before we leap into an in-depth analysis of the year's most notable stories, we welcome Brian Perkins, who has news of sad tidings for one Christmas shopper.
The man who carried out a series of robberies armed with a cucumber was jailed for 7 years yesterday. Ernest Coverley, 37, used a cucumber wrapped in a bin liner to resemble a gun in all but 2 of 16 raids. Mr. Orlando Pownall, defending, said on 2 occasions he used an iron bar because he couldn't afford a cucumber.
Well, it's time to meet the teams now. On my right, 2 men who've worked very hard to avoid knowing anything that's happened week by week. A review of the year's news should be fun. Please welcome Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Whilst on my left, the team who knows so much about the news, they've even given up buying the European, Alan Curran and Andrew Rawnsley. Round one opens with a Sutton Butcher's invitation to those already sick of turkey.
Go mad. Buy some British beef.
Well, round one is called Exports and concerns all those things we've sent abroad this year. But unfortunately, some of them have come back. Richard, how did Sheffield roll out the barrel?
Yes. Well, I like what you said about us knowing nothing at all.
Well, you don't have to prove it so early in the program.
It was a very good start. How did Sheffield roll out the barrel?
About Sheffield, Richard. Yeah. And a barrel.
think yourself into the Middle East. Think of what was going into the Middle East.
Is it the enormous tube?
Is the enormous tube.
The enormous tube, yes. Many people thought was a gun. And was sent out to Saddam. And subsequently, Mr. Heath went out to get it back. Isn't that what happened? I am a bit out of touch, as you said.
Mr. Heath is the Prime Minister. Is that right?
Near enough, I suppose. Yeah.
Customs officers, after their triumph stopping the supergun going through Iraq or parts of it, are now examining a 26-mile-long piece of metal tubing underneath the English Channel, which is believed to be a French supergun aimed at Mrs. Thatcher.
As she once was.
As she once was. The late Mrs. Thatcher, I suppose.
Have we missed something?
Anyway, the answer to how did Sheffield roll out the barrel, the answer, we are led to believe, is secretly. The news followed an earlier scare that missile parts were being smuggled through Heathrow to Baghdad, despite customs assurances that they'd popped off the smugglers with dummy triggers. Nonetheless, American intelligence claims that Iraqi border guards are now challenging strangers with, "Halt, or I'll click." Ian, your go. Whose lot was improved by Tony Benn leaving the country?
Ah.
Same area.
Who'd gone out to get Billy Brandt back? Who'd gone out to get Macatoni back? No, Ben joined the queue of has-been politicians who went out to see Saddam Hussein to say, can we have our hostages back?
Yep. Well, this refers back just a few weeks to the visit to Baghdad of Tony Benn, the shadow foreign secretary, and democracy's answer to Judge Dredd to secure the release of more hostages from Kuwait. His was the last visit by an individual Western politician before the European Parliament started organising coach parties. Andrew, welcome to the programme. Your question, who was heard but not seen a lot in Israel?
This is Douglas Hurd. Part of his leadership campaign was out in the Middle East, and it was snubbed by the Palestinians and snubbed by the Israelis. Despite that, he didn't do as well as he might have hoped in the campaign to succeed Mrs. Thatcher, because he was then snubbed by most of the Conservative MPs who he hoped would vote for him. But I think that's about it.
That is exactly it. It's all about the Israeli Knesset and their ritual sacrifice for free-range Foreign Secretary Douglas Hurd, who was efficiently snubbed by both the Israeli and the Palestinians, so heartily ignored, in fact, that he's even faded from his own holiday snaps. Alan, normally at this point I would say, here's a piece of music. However, today I'm not so sure.
Sitting in a sleazy snack bar, sucking sickly sausage rolls. In a dirty old town on the back of the town, setting my sights on gold. It's plain to see, it's black and white. This Geordie boy's gonna do all right. Gonna make you dance, gonna make you sing. Those Geordie boys do anything. Tell it like it is, today we'll take its time to tell you what tonight might bring. They spur you on in London town when you hear those Geordie sing, sing.
It brought the tears to my eyes, but Alan, who wept on seeing the penalty?
This is Bamber Gascoigne.
Yes.
Who went Bazza? Who went into the World Cup? A non-entity, and came out of it a hero, largely through failing, because that's what England does. Cast your mind back to Dunkirk and Alfred's Cakes and all those other disasters that we found ourselves in. Captain Scott, you have to be fail in order to be a hero. And Gazza wept because he, because he infringed a rule which meant he couldn't play in the next round of the thing we weren't going into anyway because we weren't good enough to get into it. So everybody wept, and Gazza came home and made a lot of records and millions of pounds.
This refers to Gazza, who was in tears after the West Germany match, reflecting our national soccer team's performance in the World Cup, in which the players started off rather poorly and then rapidly lost their form. England's fans, whose team motto is, some you lose, some you draw, travelled on a ticket especially organised to give them coverage of England's entire run of appearances in the competition. It's called a day return. In keeping with the spirit of the season, the scores at the end of round one are for all, and we press on. Now, for an advertisement from the Bucks, free press.
Senior seat test engineers wanted to carry out qualification and development testing of complete ejection seat assemblies. Some travel between locations may be necessary.
Well, round two is all about those little eccentricities that make one proud to be British. A round of cock-ups. Richard, a question. Who'd give his right arm to be back in the saddle?
It's our old friend Charlie.
Chazza.
Chazza, yes. Who fell off his horse playing in the polo match. And he had to go to hospital. And he took his own chef in with him so that he wouldn't cause too much inconvenience. Remember that? Because he has to have these very special foods, you know. He only makes sort of killed fish and organic turnips. And the hospital staff went up to catering this kind of thing.
They can do cold veg for everyone else.
Anyway, he's on the bend now. Good on you, Chazza.
On that low note, yes. So he doesn't know much, but he's got that one all right. It concerns the polo prone Prince Charles, who queued up in the casualty department of the Cirencester Hospital to have his broken arm seen to after falling from his horse. Princess Diana visited him during his stay, taking with her a bunch of flowers in case he fancied a chat. Meanwhile, simply an advice poured in from previous sufferers of broken bones, with this insight revealed by Gloria Honeyford.
The prince will find the most simple tasks quite difficult at first. Just putting on a pair of tights was a tremendous struggle.
Whoops. Ian, a literary question for you. Who was hectored about her budgie?
Ah, yes, I know this one. It's Fazza. Fergie, as we call her. This story was in Private Eye. She said, well, I read it. There was some suggestion by an appallingly irresponsible magazine that the story of Fergie's helicopter, which was called Buzzer the Helicopter, was in fact completely ripped off a previous book called Hector the Helicopter. And in the previous book, the helicopter had gone on adventures and flown home and had a dream. And in Buzzer's book, Buzzer had done exactly the same thing. And luckily, this suggestion was totally untrue. Your lordship.
Yes, it's all about the grand old Duchess of York, who had 10,000... No, I won't go on with that. Grand Old Duchess of York, a graduate of the Princess Michael School of Creative Photocopying. In his children's book, Budgie, the little helicopter appeared to bear a curious resemblance to a 25-year-old nappy ripper called Hector the Helicopter. The original publishers are still considering legal action and were last seen thumbing through a copyright section of Jane's Fighting Solicitors. And whilst we're on the subject of cock-ups...
A headline in yesterday's Daily Mirror inadvertently referred to Sarah Brightman, wife of Andrew Lloyd Webber, as ex-wife. Ms. Brightman is still married to Mr. Lloyd Webber, and we apologize to her for the error.
Andrew, here's some music before we launch into your question. Curried eggs for me. Oh, blimey. Well, that was the Temple City Kazoo Band. Also sprach Sarah Susan. And your question is, Andrew, what couldn't focus on empty space?
This, it's the Hubble telescope, which couldn't see all the things it was supposed to see when they put it up there. And that's about all I can remember about it.
The Hubble telescope.
Quite right, it all refers to the team of scientists operating the Hubble Space Telescope, who, receiving its first batch of satellite pictures, discovered a minute fault that meant all they were receiving were indecipherable interference, which later turned out to be a rerun of George Best on Wogan. Alan, your question? Why did old Nick fall out with Jerry?
I know this one.
He's lying.
It was a whistle blown in The Spectator by Lawson's boy. Nicholas Ridley had given him an exclusive non-interview in which nothing that he said was supposed to be recorded anywhere. And he said that he didn't like the Germans. And as a result of this, Ridley had to walk and spend more time with his family.
As soon as the complaints flooded in, he threw in the towel, only to find a German sunbather had beaten him to it. And, keeping up with the Christmas spirit, the scores are still tied at 8-8. And we go over to Brian now for a little clarification of seasonal opening times.
To avoid speculation, please note that during the winter, we will open every day at 11:30 a.m., except Mondays and Tuesdays, when we're closed. When we're open, we close at 2:30 p.m., reopening at 7 p.m. before deciding when to close, except Sundays when, as we're obliged not to open until 30 minutes later, we don't close until 30 minutes later, but then we don't reopen. When the weather deteriorates, we've often reopened for catering extremely early and not close until much later, except when there's no point opening. When we are open, food is available at normal meal times, so obviously there may be times when we are open, but not serving food. However, we won't, of course, be serving food when we're not open. That would be silly.
Perkins the Master. Well, this round is all about departures and resignations. It's going to be a long program. Richard, about whom could it be said that advisers advise and ministers resign?
This was that funny old American Johnny that used to be up with Thazo in the attic.
West.
No, that's the fellow. Okay. He looked very like Dr. Jonathan Miller, I always thought. And Sir Alan Walters. And Lawson, is this this? It seems an awful long time ago.
This is the quiz of the year, Richard.
I thought it was last year. Anyway, Lawson went off to spend more time with his family. And Walter decided he would like to do that too, so they both went off.
Lawson said it's him or me, and he was wrong. They were both sacked. Very, very funny.
It's all about Nigel Lawson, who resigned after differences of opinion with the Prime Minister's pet advisor, Alan Waters. She denied he came to Number 10 in any official capacity and just there as a friend of the family. It's a rotten job, but someone has to do it. Now, here's some sad music for you, Ian.
The party is over. It's time to call it a day. They burst your pretty balloon and taken the moon away.
Ian, for whom was the party finally over this year?
Well, that was David Owen, singing The Party's Over, under his new name of Dazza, with Linda's Farm. Now, this is the tragic death of Dr. Death.
Dr. Dead, as he's named.
Dr. Dead, who'd started a new party, the Dr. Owen Party, with a lot of members, three, which isn't bad for him, and he finally had to wind it up this year. The SDP, he said, was no longer a force in the land. He was the last to notice that. So he threw his weight behind no one at all.
He's now quite keen to join this new chap they've got in.
Yes, what's his name?
I haven't caught up with that.
Mazur, I think it is.
Hello, in glasses.
Get on with the programme now, Barry.
It's all about the former political vacuum in the SDP, finally renamed the RIP, which saw its poll rating slump from a decent negligible to a worrying oblivion. The last straw came at the weekend when the party held a ballot on its future and managed to lose its own deposit. But you have to look on the bright side.
After much reluctance, Dr. David Owen has been persuaded to write the story of his life, which politically has been something of a roller coaster. Among those persuading him has been his wife, literary agent Deborah Owen. The public don't really know David, says Deborah. He's a very interesting man outside politics.
Well, everybody has a right to their own opinion. Andrew, why is a prince leaving the sport of kings?
Oh, you've given me the one non-political one. This is the Aga Khan.
Quite right.
I don't know if he's going to spend more time with his family as well, but he's certainly deciding none of his horses will spend any more time in Britain. There was some controversy over doping, I think, and he's had enough of it all. And anyway, he's taking all his horses home and won't play with them again over here.
Absolutely right. It's His Highness Prince Aga Khan, who is withdrawing from British racing after disputed allegations claimed that one of his horses had been drugged. The prince is now sending his horses to France and Ireland, presumably disguised as a Soviet miners' welfare fund. Alan, your question now. What was the major achievement of a retiring dead sheep?
This is Geoffrey Howe. Geoffrey Howe, the former dead sheep, who briefly stirred, woke, barred, brawn, and everything began to tumble.
Yes.
And the major you refer to is the great corporal, who has now been promoted into the Thatcher spot.
It was a reference to Geoffrey Howe, not two prime ministers ago, and we're still tied at 12-all. How about now for an import story?
Martin Hartley, aged 41, of Brantford, was jailed at Leeds Crown Court for 5 years yesterday for importing heroin worth £23,000. The drugs were brought from Pakistan, disguised as pornographic video cassettes.
That's it. And now for a round of oddballs. Strange we should come to you first, Richard. Anyway, here's some music.
Thank you.
Richard, I'll give you a bonus point if you know what that was.
No, it was quite nice for a change.
It was really nice.
I was in a lift in a department store.
It could well have been. It was called A World is a Circle. And the question is, what had Wiltshire running around in ever-decreasing circles?
Yeah. These wonderful circles that appeared in the fields. And many of them people thought that they were hoaxes, that sort of thing. And many of us didn't know what they were. And a certain magazine proposed that they'd been made by Captain Robert Maxwell as sort of storage depots for the unsold copies of his new newspaper. They were going to be dropped by helicopter. Might be something in that, actually. Well, the official theory was that they were caused by something called a magnetically created plasma vortex. That was the official.
Which is the technical term for we've no idea.
Oh, another name for Captain Bob.
A plasma vortex. Yes, rather good.
I thought he was one of those.
It's the mysteriously formed circles that reappeared this summer in Wiltshire cornfields, quickly followed by the mysteriously formed Wiltshire scientists who denounced the suspect extraterrestrial parking spaces as fake. Various plausible explanations offered, one being an outbreak of moles with large teeth and protractors. However, a more likely story is that of Dudley Moore running around in circles after his free-range chickens. What a career that man has had. Anyway, Ian, why might the face that launched 1,000 ships be that of the Happy Eater?
Oh, Helen of Troy.
Yes.
The face that launched 1,000 ships.
Yes.
What is this about, Richard?
Some very peculiar man claimed that he'd found the site of Troy on where there was this Happy Eater restaurant. But as there never was any such place as Troy, I know this because I was told to school. It was all made up, a chap called Homer. It all seemed a bit of a pointless story, and I don't know why they're dragging it all up again.
So what do you get? Some Agamemnon burgers. Achilles nuggets. Sounds rather good.
Well, it's all because of...
Priam fillet.
Go on.
That's not terrible, too.
I'm the editor now. Shut up.
All because of Iman Wilkins, a notable Dutch author, who after considerable research was convinced that all the references in Homer's Iliad place ancient Troy at the junction of the A11 and the A604 outside Abingdon, roughly on the site of a Happy Eater restaurant. It's just on the left next to the Wooden Horse Burger Bar. And this is the same author who earlier discovered the Hanging Garden Centre of Babylon and the Colossus of Rhodes, now renamed the M25. Currently working on a theory that the city of Atlantis was never in fact lost, just renamed Telford. Just time for a late present idea.
For sale, Rottweiler bitch, lovely temperament, reluctant to let go.
Andrew, your final question in this part of the quiz. Who laid down the law in rock and roll? Definition question.
Definition.
How do we define what we see before us?
The House of Lords. Yes, those old rockers had to strut their funky stuff. Because there's part of the broadcasting bill required that there should be a rock channel, but it should not be a pop channel. So their lordships had to decide what is rock music. I'm not quite sure what they finally decided. I think Mozart, they said, would be all right on this rock channel.
One of the old boys said it is music Elvis. That goes thump, thump, thump. That is what it is.
That is rock music.
That's either of
them. That's Mozart.
Their lordships, under the guidance of Screaming Lord Denning, ruled that pop included rock music and other kinds of modern popular music characterized by a strong rhythmical beat and a reliance on electronic amplification. Or in their case, hearing aids. Finally, Alan, where have they put in a word to give Oxford Street cred?
This is OED, Mad Dictionary Disease.
Right.
As they produced... The Oxford University Press produced a new Oxford Dictionary this year with 20,000 new definitions, which are already old. There are things like rock and roll and street credibility
and gazza.
And yuppie and gazza.
That's right, absolutely. Well, you get the point. It's all about the latest edition of the Oxford Concise English Dictionary, which claimed 20,000 new entries, including smack, kissogram, gazza, and écu, but not hopefully in that order. Out, however, go many words deemed to be totally redundant, like Marxism, the European, and Labour government. Curiously, if you look up the word Charlie, it says sea under horse. And before I reveal the scores at this halfway point in our review of the year, and guess what they are, I'll ask the team for some of their favourite cuttings from 1990. Richard, do you have a favourite?
Well, this is, I don't know if you notice now, but you don't have husbands and wives anymore. You have partners. Everybody's got a partner. I've got a partner. And the chap wrote to the Telegraph about this saying, "Sir, I've received a general circular about partners and the community charge. I married my partner 30 years ago and we were partners in a grocery shop. My partner later stopped being my partner to bring up the children. Subsequently, I took on another partner. Now, my partner has opened a delicatessen with another partner. But this partner's partner has now left her partner and lives with another partner, who, as it happens, is also my partner. She is claiming a share of the delicatessen, owned by her former partner and my former partner, who is my partner, but not the partner who is her partner. It is all very confusing."
Ian, what have you got for us?
This is the reporting of the tragic loss of Mrs. Thatcher by Arab News. And it's talking about the debate. It says, "Mrs. Thatcher's college friend at Oxford and fellow Tory MP, Elaine Kellett Bowman, could not hide her emotion when she stood up to speak during the no-confidence debate. In her tributes to the Prime Minister, millions of viewers saw her gobbing."
Order! Andrew.
Yeah, this is from the Daily Telegraph, and it also touches upon the late Queen Margaret and on her predecessor, Edward of Arabia, as he's now known. And it's all about redecoration at number 10. "The work will be the most substantial redecoration at number 10 since there was a problem of dampness when Mr. Heath was Prime Minister in the early 1970s.
Alan, what have you brought?
Well, I brought this in the Manchester Evening News, Barry. There's a 20-foot-high male statue with his arms, legs, head and so on made from fiberglass imitation loaves of bread, which has been erected on the wall of the Arndale Centre at Middleton, is not to be removed, although it has offended a number of people. Instead, the nude figure, which faces a busy bypass, has had the offending loaf covered with a sun-blessed wrapper."
And on that seasonal note, let me tell you the scores at the end of part one, which are Richard and Ian 16, but Alan and Andrew 16. In other words, it's a draw, but we'll be back at our usual time next Saturday for a fight to the finish. But before we leave you, it's just time for a final offering from Brian.
"A man found carrying a cosh in Folkestone has been charged. The defendant, Nikola Dunasiev, said in interviews he'd been carrying a 10-inch coil of steel with a rubber center and a brass nut on the end to remind him to have his coat repaired."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz of the Year were Richard Ingrams, Ian Hislop, Andrew Rawnsley and Alan Carr. The chairman was Barry Took, and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The program was written by John Langdon and the producer, Diane Messias.